Arm's Length Reporting for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Good news from KER. This is the Al Corlin, Dr. Charles Page segment, talking with Chuck about his experiences. You have done a fair amount of work that I'd like our listeners to be aware of, Chuck, dealing with people living in Africa. Primarily, I would probably have to say some of the indigenous people living over there who you have worked with. Regardless of what people think about the medical system in the United States, you know, you can knock it all you want, but the fact of the matter is they have no system over there. And if people like you didn't go over on a volunteer basis, a lot of lives would be lost. Let's talk about some of your experiences.
Well, so I started going to Africa doing mission work, and I just work in several different hospitals, kind of helping them train surgeons in Africa. You know, that's one of the biggest deficits in, you know, in the African continent is actually surgeons. You can imagine, I mean, they speak so many different languages that, you know, the training surgeons is really kind of difficult. I mean, so anyway, but one of the reasons I keep going back is it's always an attitude adjustment for me. And I was over there in February, right before they really stopped all of the, you know, the plane trips. I almost didn't get out of the country.
Yeah.
But I was in Niger, which is in Africa, and it's really sad. You know, I mean, you know, we think about the things that we worry about here, about not having ventilators if we get COVID, or not having, you know, all of these, you know, remdesivir and all these things. I mean, they have none of those resources there. In fact, you know, in Africa, people are dying of diseases that we haven't seen here in 50 to 100 years, like, for example, typhoid fever. And in particular, this one place in Africa, typhoid is just, you know, it's almost a pandemic. I mean, you know, probably saw 10 to 15 children die of typhoid, and it gets in their intestines, and their intestines rupture, and then these kids get really sick. You know, and they've also got chronic malaria. They're also malnourished. And so it's a real challenge. It really changes your attitude. You know, the things that I often kind of bellyache about here, I go over there, it seems like when I come back, I don't have those complaints anymore, you know, because I realize how good we have it over here. And I think sometimes we forget that, you know, as we're kind of going through things, especially all the things that we're hearing in the media, all the negative things, and, you know, the lack of, you know, PPEs, you know, personal protective equipment and all these things. But, you know, over there, they don't have any personal protective equipment. You know, so often we're taking drains out of one patient and throwing them in some alcohol and using it on the next patient. And so it really helps us realize, you know, in the United States and in Western countries, just how blessed we are.
You know, I'd like to dwell on that just for a little bit. We do have a bit of time left here, no question, but I'd like to dwell on that a little bit. One of the facets of human nature, I guess I should say characteristics of human nature is, you know, the grass is always greener on the other side of the street. People who oftentimes live in almost a perfect world in America are still depressed. But I think when you stop and realize how good we have it over here, then a lot of the daily BS that we're dealing with just kind of goes out the window, in my opinion, Chuck.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I kind of learned that every day. You know, like even today in the clinic, I had a young girl who I had seen in the hospital. She had had COVID. She has a lot of medical problems, and she actually works as an EMT, and she works in a nursing home, and we had an outbreak here in a nursing home, and probably 10 people died. You can imagine the stress of just watching those folks die. And I'll tell you, you know, COVID is not a respecter of persons, and, you know, it is real. I don't think it's as bad as the media is projecting it to be, but just thinking about the stress that she went through being in a situation where she's not in control. And I think for Westerners, you know, people living in industrialized countries, you know, for people living in industrialized countries, you know, we've never been in a situation where we can't fix it. And I think that's one of the hardest things about COVID even is that we, you know, it's one of those things that we're not in control. You know, and humanly speaking, we've realized that here in the United States. I mean, in the United States, we're not used to having these diseases that we can't fix.
You know, I want you to elaborate on one thing, if you would, Chuck, and that is the lack of control on the part of medical society in controlling COVID. Explain that, would you? How big a problem is it?
Well, I mean, we can't stop a virus. I mean, you know, and all the measures that we've taken, some of them are common sense, some of them are backed by science, and some of them are not backed by really good science and really good studies. You know, we're trying to do the best that we can do, you know, from a public health standpoint. But really, when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, just like we can't stop the flu, you know, we can't stop, the COVID virus. We can, you know, when people get the virus, we can, you know, prevent, you know, people from getting really sick. And, man, what a blessing to be here in the United States and have, you know, the remdesivir, and that's what, you know, Trump got. And then also to have, you know, the plasma when you get really sick. And this girl that I talked to today, I mean, she really got sick and had to have plasma transfusions and probably would not be here today if it weren't for the plasma. So, you know, it's just one of those things. We still, for many viral infections, we don't have any kind of cure. I mean, think about HIV. We still don't have a vaccine for HIV. We don't have a vaccine for, like, hepatitis A, or hepatitis C. Fortunately, we have a vaccine for hepatitis B, but, you know, hepatitis C, of course, we now have treatment. We have antiviral treatments that we can give. But I just think often, you know, we always tend to focus on the negative things. I know I do a lot, Al. I just, you know, I tend to focus on the things that I don't have. And, you know, so often getting in situations realizing, you know, that it could always be worse. I think it always changes our perspective. And that's why I go over to Africa. One of the reasons, I mean, I feel like so often I get so much more than I give when I go over there.
I don't find that hard to believe at all. I really don't. You know, I want to ask you one question, and that is a lot of depression going on in the United States, as we mentioned last time we did an editorial, a lot of anxiety going on in the U.S. In terms of dealing with that, what are you telling your patients, Chuck?
One of the main things is to control the amount of media that you get, because it just causes more confusion. I believe it causes more anxiety. It's kind of adding fuel to the fire. Get plenty of rest. You know, I'll tell you one thing that's really been helpful for me, and one of the reasons why I started writing is because it really helped me to process the events that were going on in my life, you know, and try to make some sense out of it emotionally and spiritually. But, you know, there's a growing body of literature that talks about the benefit of journaling.
Yeah.
Decreases our blood pressure, decreases our stress. There's studies that show it increases wound healing, you know, all kinds of things. And so I would also encourage people to stop every day and stop and kind of have a kind of a devotional time or a time where you sit down and you just kind of write down your thoughts and your feelings of the day. And I think that really helps.
You know, I want to focus on that, Chuck, if you don't mind. We're going to take a real quick commercial break here shortly, but I would like you to prepare yourself for the following task, if you choose to accept it. And that is, I have heard a lot about journaling. I don't know a lot about it. I have a number of friends, as you know, by looking at the guest list on our, on our platform. I have a lot of friends who are clinical psychologists, psychiatrists, etc., etc. They have talked a lot about journaling, but nobody has really ever explained what journaling is all about. You got a couple minutes to talk about that?
Sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to be right back after the commercial break, talking with Dr. Charles Page about the benefits of journaling.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for another segment of KER Politics. Al Corlin chatting with Dr. Charles Page. At the end of the last segment, Chuck, you talked a little bit about journaling. We talked a little bit about some of the challenges going on in society right now because of COVID. Now what I would like to talk about is a non-pharmaceutical way to deal with these challenges. And I'm not incredibly familiar, thoroughly, I guess I should say, familiar with journalizing, but I do it on a daily basis, just at the suggestion of my friends. Tell us two things. Number one, what's the most effective way to do that, and how does one start doing it? Is it just like keeping a diary, Chuck?
It's very similar. So I think, you know, everybody is going to have a little bit different twist on this. I think it's the most important thing is making a decision to do it and finding a time to do it. Like, for example, when you first get up in the morning or when you go to bed, sometimes going to bed and doing a bedtime journal, kind of processing the things that happened during your day, is very important. You know, there's a part of our brain called the hippocampus,
mm-hmm.
and the hippocampus takes short-term memory and converts it into long-term memory. So when we go to sleep, your hippocampus kind of works overtime. And so as we process things during the day, and we can begin to process things people say and events that happen and things, it helps us to kind of end our day on a positive note and hopefully not embed those negative things in our mind. I'm kind of experimenting in this. I've written a study kind of about what the Bible and the Scripture says about sleep, and it's called Give It to God and Go to Sleep, and it's kind of that kind of process of, at the end of the day, kind of dealing with all those things that race through our mind. So I'm doing one on sickness, too, because I think there's just a lot of people now with COVID who are just, you know, they're just reeling in stress and all these emotions and just the uncertainty of the virus itself, like we were talking about in the previous segment. It's just something we can't control. And so being able to sit down and write down our thoughts and our expressions and our experiences, I just think it helps us to kind of bring to mind things and also helps to remind us of some of the, you know, the truths and the principles that we know in life.
Tell me why that occurs when one is journaling. I first learned about journaling, interestingly enough, years ago from a woman who was a banker. And, talk about strange bedfellows, I have to say. But it strikes me that journaling would work only because you're focusing on a particular situation. But what I'm hearing you say, Chuck, is that if you journal at night, say just prior to actually going to sleep, you get your subconscious mind in as one of the actors in the play. Is that correct?
Well, yeah. I mean, think about the things that plague us as we go to bed. It's the decisions that we've made. It's the things that we didn't get done on our to-do list and all those things. I kind of take a spiritual approach to it. You know, talking about the Scriptures, about how God never slumbers and sleeps and how God's active. But, you know, there's a lot of different dynamics depending upon your worldview and depending upon how you see things. But you know, I do think it would benefit us to keep us from, you know, dealing with, the, you know, the majority of things that rob us of sleep, like worry and stress. You know, those kind of things.
So tell me how, I mean, I don't mean to break in here, but, you know, I've got a short memory. Tell me how journaling would alleviate stress for a person who had a tendency to be pretty stressful. I think I told you the story earlier in the week that my mm-hmm. acupuncturist is just said she can't even hardly open the doors wide enough to get all the potential clients in there because so many people today are suffering from stress and anxiety. What is the principle behind how journaling would have a positive effect on something negative like stress and another negative of fear, obviously, like anxiety?
Well, I'm no psychiatrist. You know, I'm a surgeon. I failed my psychiatry rotation, by the way. But just affirming those things that happen in our lives, you know, like, for example, someone says something about us that we know is untrue, yet it, you know, the old saying about, you know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. People's words sometimes can really harm us. And so, you know, going back and thinking about what was said to us or whatever, and then begin to write it down and begin to verbalize that we know that that's not true. You know what I'm saying? Or
yeah.
Then sometimes it is true, and there's some things that we can learn from that. Hey, maybe there is a hint of truth in that, and begin to just kind of ponder over those things, you know, and expressing our emotions, I think, is a good thing. So often, you know, I'm an emotional stuffer. I'm a surgeon. I deal with the problem, and later on I have to deal with that, you know. So, and I think we all have these stressful things that happen in our lives that sometimes when we begin to slow down, you know, they begin to surface, you know. And just begin to write down kind of how we felt about that, how we responded in that situation, and thinking about our responses, and you know, how could I respond differently to those circumstances, you know, or maybe what were the ways that I, you know, did pretty good responding to those circumstances, and just kind of analyzing those events, analyzing those relationships and things, and then looking at our life priorities too.
Yeah. You know, I got to tell you, Chuck, the one thing this COVID situation, which has been with us being, you know, my world here in the Northwest, it's been almost 7 months that we've been in a lockdown situation. And it's gotten pretty serious in the sense that people, because of our litigious society, restaurant owners, golf clubs, et cetera, are very conscientious about adhering to the COVID guidelines. And I'm sure you know what they are. I'm not going to worry about going into that right now. But the one macro, and I use the word macro here in the sense that I would have to say the most important thing that's come out of COVID is the isolation. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but wouldn't journalism, Chuck, really kind of take away some of the isolation issues? And if so, can you tell us why?
Well, so, I mean, I think there's several different aspects to that. I mean, for me, spiritually, I realize that, you know, I'm not alone because God's with me, you know?
Yeah.
But I also think that it's just a way of us beginning to process those events. I mean, yes, I mean, we do have people that feel isolated. Even in hospitals now, you know, family members are dying and, you know, the family can't always come in to see them. And so
right. There
is this sense of I'm alone in this and I have no control over this. So, there's a lot of things that can make us feel lonely. I think now, though, fortunately, with the Internet, although it's not a replacement for the human touch and for relationships, we have FaceTime. We have all these different things where we can connect with people now online. It's not perfect, but it is at least something we can do. And I learned that as I was dealing with patients in the hospital, is that often if I can take my cell phone and call the family and put them on FaceTime and let them talk to their family member, then it does. I mean, it's that's one of the best medicines that we can give someone. It's just being able to connect to their loved ones. So,
I don't find that hard to believe at all. Chuck, got to take a real quick commercial break. Ladies and gentlemen, journaling. Think about it. Any questions, ask us for next time Chuck is on the show. He'll be back certainly within the week. Thanks, Chuck.
Okay. Thanks, Al.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome in. Time for KER Politics. Actually, we now call it the good news from KER. I have John Horvat on the line with me again. I spoke with John last week. Y'all heard a little bit about him, but I would like to elaborate now on what Mr. Horvat is all about. Let's talk first, John, if you don't mind, about your organization.
Okay, that's great. Great to be back on the show. The name of my organization is the American Society for the Defense of Tradition, Family, and Property, and that's TFP for short.
Right.
And we're a civic organization of Catholic inspiration. We defend tradition, family, and property through books and publications, through activism on the streets, university activism. We do educational programs for youth. We have offices throughout the United States, and you know, we are very active in a lot of the pro-family, pro-life issue, traditional marriage issues that are out there, and that is what we do. We do it basically through books and publications and our activism.
Okay, and I appreciate that. I stand behind you so far for everything that I've heard that your organization believes in. I'm coming from the same spot. John, having said that, we celebrated Columbus Day last Monday, almost actually about a week ago. You wrote an interesting article on the personality of Christopher Columbus. Take a couple of minutes, if you would, John, and let's go over that. His personality, his beliefs, etc.
Right. I mean, as you know, there's so much has been written about him that is not true, and they're trying to take away his holiday and put in its place the indigenous days or other types of days. But if you look at the history of Christopher Columbus, you find that he was a man that was a very religious man, and he had very much in mind the idea of evangelization, of helping people. He was not a person that was in it for the money. He did not make money off this adventure. He thought he was going to China. He thought he was going to the other side of the world. He had other goals. He had other goals in mind when he just bumped into America. So, you know, he has been very much mischaracterized, and I think that is very, very unfortunate, because he did a lot for America. He didn't enslave the populations. The Caribbean Indians that he ran into already had slavery, and some of these tribes were cannibals. They had very customs that were extremely hard on the people they subjected themselves to. So it's a case of history being rewritten that I think needs to be corrected.
I think probably with some of the movements going on in the United States right now, this past week in, I believe it was Portland, Oregon, statues were torn down of Abraham Lincoln and Teddy Roosevelt. I simply can't understand at all why that happened, and I have to just chalk it up to the incredibly high level of anger in the country right now, which I have personally experienced just this past week. Having said that, John, I want to talk a little bit about Catholicism. I want to start out by asking you a question about the Pope. A lot of my friends, a lot of my Catholic friends, feel that perhaps the Pope is a little bit on the socialistic side. My personal thought about that is the Pope is the Pope. If you're a Catholic, you believe in the concept of the Pope, i.e. the position of being the highest official within the Catholic Church. I believe that. I don't see anything wrong with that personally. I do believe that non-secular items such as private property, etc., are probably not in his purview. John, what do you think about that?
Well, there is a lot of controversy now, especially since he came out with an encyclical letter about 10 days ago, or a little longer, 2 weeks ago, and which he talked about private property. And giving this idea of property being the earth belongs to everyone, everyone should share it, everyone should have equal access to it, borders should not exist, therefore, and all these kind of things that are very far out in left field. And so I definitely think it's not according to church teaching. The church does teach about private property. I mean, it does. There are two commandments that defend private property: thou shalt not steal, and thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's goods. So,
right.
It does have a bearing on certain moral issues, but to enter into details like United Nations supervision and other things like that is completely out of the line of what the Pope should be doing.
Well, I look at the example in the United States right now of open borders, and open borders from an economic standpoint are very, very detrimental, in my view, to America. Having said that, I really, in the history of the world, open borders have never existed with any civilized societies. And I really believe that the concept of sovereignty of a country it's been around for so long. It's what I grew up with, John. It's what you grew up with. And I think we really have to maybe draw a line in the sand here and say, you know, the Pope is very important in the lives of a lot of people, not just Catholics. But I think to maintain that importance, he really needs to stay away from political issues. And, I mean, you can say whatever you want, but you have to be aware of your particular status in life. And I'm sure that Pope Francis is aware of his status. His role, as given to him, as Catholics believe by God, is to simply keep the Catholic Church together. What are your thoughts on that, John?
Right. I mean, the Pope is a unifying factor. He is the head of the Church, and you know, and therefore, you know, governs the Church. And you know, it doesn't necessarily mean he's a saint. You know, because he is human, and all humans make mistakes. They can make very serious mistakes. So, you know, he is infallible according to church teaching in certain areas, but certainly not in economics and in the areas in which he has opined just recently in this encyclical letter that you know, just included so many themes that are very political, very socialistic, and you know, and cause a lot of confusion among Catholics because they say, well, you know, what's going on? We need to think in terms of salvation of souls, you know, and the moral issues that you know, are the purpose for the Church to save souls and to bring you know, to go to heaven. And the encyclical letter doesn't have anything at all about that, and so it is very confusing and perplexing for a lot of Catholics.
Well, as I understand the Bible, both the Old Testament and the New Testament, you know, obviously focusing to a large extent on the New Testament here, Christianity is all about salvation. It's all about living according to the proclamation of the kingdom as Jesus Christ taught Christians. And I think if you go any farther than that, you're probably stepping out of bounds. Salvation is the most important part of Christianity. And some of the secular items that a lot of Christians are getting into right now, I think are going to do nothing but tear the people of the world apart from each other. John, I've got about a minute left. You got the final word, sir.
Right. Yeah, I mean, as you say, the Christian religion does go for the salvation of souls and the living of a virtuous life and staying within the commandments of God. And that's where we need to really, I think a lot of our problems today are not economic or political problems, but are moral problems.
Correct.
And if we concentrate on those moral questions, a lot of other things will be put in place.
John, I have to tell you, I agree 100%. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want any more information on John's organization, if you want to request a copy of his free book, simply click on the informational page that I placed regarding John Horvath going along with the weekend show here. Mr. Horvath, going to get you on more and more often. Thank you for your time. Hey, welcome in here to wrap up KER. The good news from KER, this is in a political direction, though, talking with Jim McKinney right now. It's not necessarily good news. In my opinion, it's more very what I would call frustrating news. I had a Trump-Pence sign in my backyard that was facing the golf course on my property, and somebody came along last night, pulled out that sign, and put in a Biden-Harris sign. Makes me very angry when people actually infringe on my property and do something like that. I have a major problem with that, but I'm not going to go stark raving mad. All I'm going to say is I am so disappointed in American society right now, and I am so disappointed in the Democratic Party because of all of the personal hatred that has been instigated in our country. Jimmy, I'd like you to comment on that.
Well, up until 2015, everybody in Hollywood, everyone in Washington, D.C., everyone in New York wanted to be seen with Donald J. Trump. He was given awards. He was friends with Al Sharpton and people like Jesse Jackson. But something happened when he announced his presidency. The Clinton campaign and the Democratic Party went on a scorched earth destruction of character campaign that created a tremendous amount of animosity towards the man in for politics. They've carried forward that, the Democratic Party, and actually Republicans as well within Washington, D.C., have carried forward comments through the Russia collusion hoax, through the Ukraine impeachment, through the COVID crisis, in order to undermine his character and destroy him personally and create a tremendous amount of hate. The result of that, we have seen in cities around America, over 200 cities, over $1 billion in damage, with burnt property, with businesses destroyed, with people actually killed over violence that was created by this hatred and fear and intimidation that Donald Trump was a fascist and a racist. They are both fabricated lies. And unfortunately, so many people are tied up in that belief on the left right now that it seems like we don't have a way out of it.
Well, it really does seem like we don't have a way out of it. I mean, to me, this whole thing is absolutely amazing. Violence, anarchy in the streets of Seattle and Portland, Los Angeles, San Francisco, going back to Minnesota on the East Coast, et cetera, makes me very, very unhappy. And what I'm starting to do now is simply explain situations like this on this particular radio program and on our website. No pros, no cons, no animosity, no name calling. Simply trying to do what I can to inform society of what's going on. If listeners choose not to buy into that, that's fine. All they have to do is let me know, and I will immediately go in a different direction, which I already have to a very large extent. KER Politics is now called The Good News from KER. If you listen to many of the other segments for this weekend show with John Horvat talking about non-secular issues, with Chuck Page talking about how to improve yourself, how to isolate yourself from anger, you'll see the direction that I am taking now with the program. Jimmy, you know, as the chairman of the Re-Elect Trump Committee, you got to be going through an awful lot of hardships right now.
You know, I in the light of the KER good news stories, I will say that there's a tremendous number of people that actually still believe in America. There's a tremendous number of people that are out there trying to get involved in order to protect our basic freedoms, freedom of speech, freedom to worship. You know, casinos are open, but churches are closed here in Washington State. There are people that are standing up. And I'm optimistic. I'm optimistic that there are more people out there that actually love this nation and want to see it do better than there are that think it needs to be torn down. So from that perspective, it's hard. We get people coming into the office every day that have had two or three signs like yours torn down, but they keep getting them. And people that were not willing to stand up in the past because they were intimidated by the left and some of these accusations realize that Donald Trump is not the perfect character, but none of us are. We're all human beings. And that, look, in order to protect our future, somebody's got to stand up and fight. No one hired Donald Trump because he was a nice guy. No one voted for him because he was the greatest character in the world. They voted for him because he was standing up to this elite ideology in Washington, D.C. that thinks that disconnected from our society and thinks that they're more important and they know better than everybody else while they sell us out, while they sell Americans out and their jobs, what their freedoms and their individual rights. And what we're seeing is a pushback. So I'm optimistic that we're going to have a significant change, and I'll predict it. I think November 3rd, we're going to see a very different outcome than the polls and the media are trying to present.
Well, that's pretty hard to say. That's what happened in 2015. I do have a little bit of fear for our society if Joe Biden and Kamala Harris don't get elected. I do have a certain amount of fear because I don't think the Democrats will stop there. I think you will see the violence that has been going on in Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, Los Angeles, various cities in the Midwest, and most of the cities on the East Coast, I think will escalate, Jimmy.
I'm afraid that that may be the case. What I'm more concerned about is what happened under the Obama administration. The Obama administration, in order to achieve their ideological goals, used all elements of government, the FBI, the Department of Justice, the Civil Rights Division, and the DOJ, IRS, the EPA. They used the power of government to influence, intimidate businesses, to shut down people they did not like, imprison some people for small acts. The film director that was charged for a Senate campaign donation and imprisoned for seven months. Dinesh D'Souza, unbelievable political attack on individuals. And that's what I fear most with a Biden-Harris, is retribution and using those elements of power, not in line with the Constitution, but in line with their ideology. And that's what people are pushing back against.
Well, people are pushing back against that right now. The country basically is, I would have to say, as divided as I have ever seen it. My goal from now on, because I think that this program, we have a big enough audience that we can make a difference, and I am going to focus now with people like Charles Page and others. I'm going to focus simply on what we can do as individuals to make life good for us. Any comments on that one, Jimmy?
I think what people can do right now is they can vote, they can influence, and they can go ahead and pray for America. They need to get out and get people that are interested in protecting those basic values, and they need to stand up and not be afraid. I think that basically most people are good. Depends on what information they're given. And the biggest thing that we can do to change our future right now in America is not allow tech and media global corporations to direct and dictate our future. And right now they're doing it what they believe is in their best financial interests and their best ideological interests. And we've got to push back against that. You know, get off Twitter, get off Facebook, get off these influence ideas. They sell you as a slave, sell your data in the new modern slavery. And if we can get back to just basic values and principles, then I think we can move forward, and the nation can do better. And I hope that's what we have facing this COVID crisis, facing these challenges and this misinformation and this tremendously powerful, influential voices on the media, progressive ideologies. If we can push back on that, we'll be all right.
The first direct action, Jimmy, that I have taken is I received in my email yesterday notifications from Twitter and notifications from Facebook saying that where am I? How come I'm not participating? I have literally hundreds of people trying to get hold of me. I'm simply not going to Twitter or Facebook ever again. And that feeling is based on the documentary that I watched, basically that was stating how Twitter and Facebook can really control people's thoughts.
That's right, the social dilemma.
I'm pretty worried right now about this, Jimmy. But let me say this. If you guys would like you to weigh in on this, I will be taking all of my weekend coming up to address your comments. Jim, thank you.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.